This is WADF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by an anonymous donor and Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, happy new year, Dr. Lou.
And good morning and happy new year right back to you, Laurie. It's certainly good to see you. I'm sorry that I had to bring you in on your day off.
Yes,
well,
yes.
Well, anything for the audience.
That's
I mean,
right.
You know, that's who we are.
My loyalty is here.
Yeah. Well, you know, I said this in my note to the Common Sense Campaign on Happy New Year. It's easy to wish everyone a Happy New Year, but it's kind of harder to make that happen. And all I will say to the audience is that, you know, the Common Sense Campaign, along with the Alabama Conservative Coalition, those are your two strongest, you know, groups fighting for conservative values. And since I am now going to be president of the Common Sense Campaign again, I guarantee you that we will do the best we can to provide, you know, platforms for the conservative, Christian conservative viewpoints that are so necessary for us to have, you know, the kind of governance that we expect in a constitutional republic. So I think that, you know, from that standpoint, we will do our best to make this a Happy New Year. So having said that, what I'd like to do is take a retrospective look at this past year. Now, I realize that, you know, looking in the rear view mirror is not always the best thing to do, because yes, we've got 2023 in front of us, so why pay attention to the past? Well, I think the simple answer to that is there are a lot of lessons to be learned, you know, in looking at the past to see what we did wrong and what we need to do, you know, in the future. So without that retrospective analysis, I think we would be missing something important as we go forward. So what I want to do today is take a look at some of the key issues, offer my view about this. And this is subjective, I get that, you know, but it is a subjective program, and I do have a few opinions about things. Normally, you know, not Dr. Lunatic opinions, as I was called many years ago by someone on the Uncle Henry show, but nevertheless, I think it is worthwhile doing this. And what I'd like to do is take care of, you know, national and foreign policy issues with that retrospective this week, and then next week we'll look at our state issues and put them into the same framework in terms of trying to tease out, you know, what we did fine, what we didn't do so well, and see how we can set the stage for doing better in terms of our state issues than we did last year. So let's try to set the stage now for looking at where I want to go with this, okay? The first issue I think that makes sense to me to take a look at is the freedom movement, okay? And you say, well, what the hell is that? I mean, we're all free, we know that. Yes, that's true to a degree. We are free, but sometimes we're not so free, okay? And one of the things that exploded on the national stage was the freedom movement in regards to parents' rights in education. I mean, you may remember, you know, Glenn Youngkin winning the governorship in Virginia. And what was the whole issue? Well, his opponent basically said parents don't have a right to question what the teachers are teaching. Wrong. A big F wrong, okay? And that really generated not only an explosion of parental concerns and activism in dealing with the kids, their kids, and what was going on in schools. And so in place after place, you saw, you know, individuals standing up at these school board meetings and just railing against what these people were doing, okay? So whether it's CRT, whether it's 1619, whether it's whatever, okay? And the big drag queen thing. I mean, this is nuts. Drag queens at schools? And again, I mentioned to you a few weeks ago, you had this thing going on in Huntsville. middle school teacher. You know, he's a drag queen, and he's doing that in his classroom. You know, I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, you have to draw a line somewhere. And so my suggestion here, though, is that when you take a look at what parents were seeing going on in education during the pandemic, when they had to tune in and do Zoom meetings for their kids, they suddenly had their eyes open to, what the hell is going on here? So notice how I will frame this along the lines of what we've been doing to fight against Common Core since 2010 when Alabama adopted it. The reality is that Common Core was a segue leading to all these other kind of stupid things, okay? The anti-American approach to history that's part and parcel of contemporary, you know, Common Core education. We're racist, we're homogenous, homophobic, you know, imperialist, misogynist, you got it. That's who they believe we are. And I would suggest to you that when parents started to see all this stuff coming out and, you know, what their kids were doing in school, all of a sudden it lit a fire. It lit a fire in a lot of states. It hasn't lit a fire here in Alabama. And we'll talk about that next week, okay? But my point is, this freedom movement just blew up in the faces of our radical left progressives. And what did they do to shut it down? Well, they tried to arrest some poor man whose daughter had been, you know, assaulted in the bathroom by some creep who's supposed to be a transgender. So what did the school do? They transferred him to another place. Then they tried to, you know, hide what had happened. I mean, this is what you're dealing with, okay? So from the freedom movement, as far as this whole business in education, I think that's a starting point to look at. Notice also, too, though, and I should have said this before I just said my last, you know, kind of review of it. Notice how the National Association of School Boards was in cahoots with the federal administration, with Biden's administration, to suppress any kind of dissent. They turned the FBI on these parents, calling them terrorists. I mean, this is the high BS factor that we're dealing with here. So this question of the freedom movement as it pertains to education, you know, has important spin-offs, because not only have they weaponized, you know, the FBI in terms of education issues, but it's also been politicized, as we've seen. And that's the second part of the freedom movement that I want to kind of talk about. And that's this whole idea that somewhere along the line, and thank goodness for Elon Musk and the Twitter, you know, exposure of their complicity and their collusion with federal agencies to suppress free speech. Okay? Now, once again, notice how the freedom movement has gone after all of these kinds of examples of absolute corruption, absolute overreach, using the federal, you know, agencies to stop free speech and to, you know, to make sure that only one approach was taken, and that's what they're standing with. So as you look at excuse me, the freedom movement as it pertains to the First Amendment and our rights there, it seems to me that it's critical that conservatives, and again, by conservatives, I'm hoping that the GOP, when they take the House, will actually do something to forward the freedom movement. Now, whether or not they do or not, I mean, I've said this to you all before. You know, you look at what the Republicans did in 2010 with Boehner, and in 2014 when they got the Senate back with McConnell, they did nothing to stop Obama. Absolutely nothing. In fact, what they did was set the stage to make sure that Trump could not do anything. And I would argue that that's something that is extremely important in terms of making sure that we understand what is going on and the degree to which we have got to have leaders in the national, you know, government fighting for us. I mean, that's what is so absurd about Mo Brooks not being in the Senate, okay? Someone who really did believe in the same things that we believe in and would fight for them. But of course, for him to say the things he did, oh my goodness, that put him crossways with the establishment and the swamp and all the rest of that. My point being that for us to have a freedom movement, it's important that we have advocates for that freedom movement, okay? And I do think that the House Freedom Caucus is probably where we have to kind of look to make sure that what we need from them is actually being done, okay? We can't have these lily-livered idiots who just kind of mouth the party line and do nothing other than go along to get along. The hell with that. I mean, it's too far gone for us to just kind of sit back and twiddle our thumbs and say, well, everything will be okay. The Republicans are in charge. And yes, it's so good. BS on that. If we, the conservative movement in Alabama, don't hold our congressional delegation and all of and our two senators to some sort of a high standard in terms of defending freedom, shame on us. And I would argue that that's exactly the thing that we are going to do, is hold their feet to the fire. And I will hope that all of you all will be involved with that. Okay? I've already sort of set this in motion with our conservative coalition group that we're meeting in January. And we've got, you know, people who are involved with fighting for freedom. And I do think that, to move in this direction, you know, is extremely important. And our frustration and our concern has always been trying to influence what's going on in Washington, D.C. is extremely difficult, okay? We can't be running up to D.C. Who the hell has the money to do that all the time, okay? But we do have the ability to talk to our local representatives throughout the state, get their attention, push them in the right direction. You know, I reached out to Jerry Carl and, you know, our congressman from District 1 down here. We're going to be meeting with him as soon as we can schedule it. He told me to just get in touch with his scheduler in D.C., which I'll do. You know, I think they're not open until tomorrow. But my point is that we can't just take a back seat to what's going on. We have got to be engaged. We've got to move forward on it, okay? Now, here's another aspect of this, you know, freedom movement. Look at what has happened in terms of Eagle Forum, which fought for and got, you know, legislation passed, the VCAP bill, which basically said you cannot give hormone-type drugs for these transgender, you know, folks who want to move in that direction of transgenderism. We've passed that law. It was actually challenged by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And so far, Eagle Forum has won. They challenged the lawsuit, and they've won in court. So my point here is that when you look at things like Eagle Forum doing what they did, and you look at what our Alabama's Health Freedom, you know, in Alabama, that organization has done, mobilizing people against the vaccines and against the mask mandates. Those are at local levels that we've done that. Working with Health Freedom, Common Sense Campaign has done that. So what I'm suggesting to you is that when people work together, they can make some of this stuff happen, okay? I do think it is absolutely crucial that we continue to follow what Elon Musk is doing. And as he lays this out, the most dangerous thing that has come out of everything that we've seen with the Musk Twitter accounts coming out, I think they were up to, you know, the 12th filing, is this complicity between, first of all, the Biden campaign and federal agencies to suppress certain aspects of politically damaging information. The Hunter Biden laptop is the classic example, okay? And then we've seen the same thing happening once the Biden campaign transitioned to become the Biden administration. So if we are going to have the social media as our primary source for people's news, how in the world is this going to work if you've got the federal government tilting the balance against conservative views, which they have done, obviously? How does this really work? Okay, let's just run the reel back a bit, okay? Historically, the press has been able to be that balancing effect, okay? Had that balancing effect. They are the fourth estate. They try to keep the federal government and other forms of government, state and local, on the up and up. And yet what you're seeing in the media today, and we can argue about this, and I'll talk more about it down the road. You know, the genesis of this movement that you've seen is not new, okay? But I don't want to get sidetracked on this, okay? The reality is, and we all know it, you know, CNN, MSNBC, all of that, as Trump said, fake news. And it is fake news. They are nothing more than a propaganda arm of the Democratic Party, okay? It's that simple. The New York Slimes and the Washington Compost, as you know, Mark Levin says. It's quite true. And I think that, you know, given where we are, unless we have some sort of a correction, excuse me, where the major media actually become part of what they used to be in terms of holding the government to account, then if we're going to rely on social media for that, you can just bet that we are not going to have, and this is a combination of things. If the education establishment continues to move down the road it's on with Common Core, and if social media is going to be the primary source of news information by which voters are going to be, you know, making decisions on, then guess what? We are in deep kimchi, as they used to say in Japan, okay? Deep, deep kimchi. And the reason for that is it's part of this plan to just make the education of our people less rigorous, less independent-minded, just go with the flow, vote for us, we'll take care of you. That's an anathema to those of us on our side of the aisle here who believe in an independent citizenry, who are capable of living on their own, making decisions on their own without government interference. Well, we'll see how this goes, but I would argue that the freedom movement is one of the most critical things from last year that has arisen, and we need to nurture it, and we need to fight against these people at every turn, okay? Here's the second thing that I want to talk about, and I'm not going to speak a lot about it, but I do think that it kind of goes hand in hand with the freedom movement, okay? Except it's not freedom for people like us who are doing our own thing and blah, blah, blah. No, this was a victory for babies when the Supreme Court decided that Roe versus Wade was unconstitutional, okay? Now, here again, we get back into the abortion issue, and I would suggest to you that even though the Supreme Court threw this back to the states, that does not necessarily mean that abortion is going to be outlawed. Yes, some of the more conservative red states are going to do that. I get that. Excuse me. But the reality is that you've got a situation here where at least the Supreme Court is recognizing that life matters. And if the states can find the wherewithal to pass the kind of legislation that protects life, then we have a chance. Roe versus Wade completely shut that out, although, as you've seen over the last 50 years, it was contested. So the fight is still there to provide the protection for the unborn. I get that. But at least we have a chance now. And that means that we have to persuade people to move in the right direction, which is to provide protection for the unborn. And again, state by state, that's a fight that we can have, okay?
You're listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review here on WABF. If you can't listen to the entire program, you can listen to it later at WABF1480.com.
Thank you, Laurie. I had to have that little sip of water there, okay? All right, so let's look at the third argument that I want to make here, something that is extremely important. And again, look, you can order these things any way you want. I just happen to think that these, that the ordering that I have kind of makes sense for me, okay? Here's another important thing. This 40-year high of rate of inflation, okay? Now you say, well, okay, so it's going down and Biden's trying and blah, blah, blah. No, Biden is not trying, okay? That's the first thing you have to understand. He's not trying. It may be going down, but it's not because of him, except for the gas thing where he's dumped all this oil, which supposedly is bringing the price down. But, I mean, the other half of that equation, though, is that people are just driving less for a whole variety of reasons, okay? But my point is, this high rate of inflation is something which is serious, okay? It eats away at your ability to have any kind of buying power. And it means that, you know, if you're on fixed income like most of us are, who are at my age, okay, then that means that your buying power is, in fact, you know, lessened. I understand, and if you look at the economic, you know, statistics that are coming out, that for those who are still in the workforce, wages are not keeping up with inflation, okay? And what that means is that you're going to have to start making decisions about what is most important, putting food on the table, you know, making sure you can pay your heating bill if you live in Yankee land. All right, so all of these kinds of things are important aspects of inflation. But the big picture on inflation is that there's two parts of it. Number one, the lessons learned from the Jimmy Carter inflation, when Paul Volcker, who was the chair of the Fed, really smashed inflation, but he smashed it with a very harsh recession from 1980 to 1982. It worked, though. He was able to wring out the inflation that was there. And Reagan happened to be the beneficiary of all that because combined with the Reagan tax cuts, the economy took off from 82 to the end of Reagan's period of time, and it continued to grow afterwards. But my point is, number one, you have this issue of how important it is to get control of inflation and the price you are going to pay for it in order to make it happen. Okay? Now, a component part of making it happen would be nice if we had Biden doing something to increase the supply of energy. Okay, so run the reel back. What's the first thing he did when he became president? He stopped the Keystone Pipeline, excuse me, and started to cut back on energy. Why? Because of climate change. You say to yourself, you've got to be kidding me. I wish I was kidding. I mean, this is one of the most critical mistakes that he has made, which has fueled the inflation. Because energy, once again, you use oil in everything, not just for producing this, that, and the other with gasoline and blah, blah, blah. Okay? It is critical. And so when you look at what Biden is doing in terms of trying to ameliorate the crisis that we're having in inflation, if he's only going to rely on the Fed to raise interest rates, which is only going to hurt us out here in the consumerville, okay? They have to do that. They've got to wring it out. So you slow the economy down. In my view, all of this was a self-inflicted wound. All Biden had to do was just continue to have American energy independence where it was. But oh, no. Okay? Oh, no. we've got to play this the game with, you know, the religious fervor of those idiots who are climate change believers. And that's where you are with this. That's all we are doing with this. Okay? So we can sit here and talk all we want about possible solutions and this and that, and it ain't going anywhere as long as people like John Kerry and the rest of this globalist group that basically say, you know, oh, we've got to have, you know, climate change under control. Tell that to the Chinese when you start preaching this crap, okay? But that ain't going anywhere in China or India, because they know that they need energy. And if it comes from coal to fire up their industries, well, then so be it, as dirty as it is. It's amazing to me, you know, and I said this in my international relations classes forever. Why can't the West, that has the technological capabilities to improve, which the United States has done, we have scuppers that clean the air from the coal. We can do that. Why in the world aren't we selling that stuff to the Chinese? Maybe they just don't care, and it doesn't matter, so they're not going to buy any of our stuff anyway. Whatever the case is, we cannot continue to go down this climate change road and think that all is going to be well. Okay? And again, I get back to the whole question of a 40-year high in inflation. So number one, as I just suggested to you, there are reasons for this. But number two is the overall question of inflation in the historical approach to how bad things happen in countries. And one can argue Germany is the classic case of how the inflationary period that set out after 1929 and the Great Depression, inflation in Germany drove the middle classes to the Nazi Party. Okay? Bad things happen when you've got people hurting so badly that they are going to listen to whoever is out there singing the siren song of, hey, I've got the solution. Well, the Democrat Party has that solution, and that solution is more government taking over your lives and moving in that direction. And that's one of the things that we have got to fight as much as we can. And so this whole business of inflation is absolutely critical to coming to grips with this and to try to keep inflation at about the 2% rate that the Fed has tried to maintain, you know, for the last 20 years or so. And actually during the Trump period, that was actually happening. Okay? Total energy independence. We were the largest producer of energy in the world. And inflation was under control. I don't know. I just think that at this particular juncture, and even if the inflation rate right now is at 7.1% for the year, which is less than it was, you know, even I think back in the summer it was about 7.8. Yes, it's coming down. But is it going to just come down on its own? Or is there going to have to be the pain inflicted to get it out? And I think that's exactly where we're going with it, which has its own problems. But nevertheless, I think you're just going to end up having to suck it up and deal with it. Thanks to Biden. I mean, this is all self-inflicted. There's absolutely no reason for it. So there's that. Kind of linked to that issue, it's one of these economic questions. It has to do with the debt, okay? We now have $31.3 or 4 trillion that we are in debt to, okay? And I think Biden has added about another $5 trillion. Trump added a couple. Bush added 5 or 6, fighting the war on terror. I suppose we can always find ways to justify going over the budget, okay? And there's nothing new about this. I mean, this has been one of these issues that the conservatives have been arguing about forever. fiscal sanity, fiscal responsibility, the fact that you have to balance your budget. Okay, so the states have to balance their budgets. Your family has to budget its your family has to balance its budget. Thank you. I'll get it. Is Monday, okay, after a long holiday weekend. Okay, so I'm still kind of working through all that. But the fact of the matter is, we have to balance our budgets, except the feds don't. Now, we've had attempts to have a, you know, balanced budget amendment pass through, you know, the constitutional approach to things, but that goes nowhere. Goes nowhere. That's one of the reasons why there's a temptation to have this articles that Mark Levin and others want to do, a convention of states. Okay? The danger with that is I think pronounced. You know, can you guarantee that they are only going to do one thing? Take care of a balanced budget amendment, or are they going to rewrite the Constitution? And the short answer to me is that the way the whole idea of a constitution, a convention of states goes, is that the state legislatures will be selecting the people who go to this thing. Guess what? Do you think you want any of those people in Montgomery going to this? Do you trust them enough to do that? I don't. I'm sorry. And Alabama isn't the only state that has people that you can't trust to do something like that. Be that as it may, notice how, because of where we are with fiscal irresponsibility, how tempting it is to go down that constitution-changing route, a convention of states, to fix this problem. Now, I mean, at $31.3 trillion, which... right now, you're looking at about 11% of the budget, the federal budget, that goes to service the debt. What does that mean? It means you have to pay the interest, okay, 11%. That's reasonable. Guess what? The interest rates have just gone up. It's going to 25%. A quarter of the federal budget is now going to be used just to pay the interest. Now, think about that. All of your credit cards out there, run those damn credit cards up. Next thing you know, you're paying $600, $700, $800 for the interest. I mean, to pay the card back, because you know you're not going to just get away with paying the interest. My point being, your family budget can only take so much before it collapses, and that's the same thing with the feds. So, if 25% of the federal budget is now going to have to be for servicing the debt, not paying it off, okay, not paying it off, it would take $93,000 per individual citizen in Ozitazuni, us, to get this thing paid off. Well, I don't have 93 to kick in. I don't know if you do. Maybe Elon Musk and a few of them can give my share. I don't know. But the point is, you have a situation developing here where suddenly $31 trillion is going to have a budgetary impact. Oh, oops, all of these politicians, what the hell are they going to do with their damn earmarks that they just gave out? What did Shelby do for Alabama? $500 million. Okay, $500 million. I'm just suggesting to you folks that the politicians are wedded to this, and as long as they are, then what you are going to get is exactly what we're seeing. Fiscal irresponsibility. Earmarks are back. The Republicans say it caved into this. I mean, I understand there are like 4,000 earmarks in the omnibus bill, $1.9 trillion. And that's where Shelby just weighs right in. I mean, it's a joke. If it wasn't so serious, it would be laughable. So here we are as conservatives who have to live by our budgets in the family, who our state has to live by its budget, by law. Why in the hell are we putting up with this? You know? I mean, Mo Brooks has basically said this, and I'm beginning to agree with him. You know, as long as the American people continue to elect the same people, they're going to get the same results. It's kind of a no-brainer. You know? So, you know, federal goodies grease the skids, you know? I mean, what are we now going to be expecting from good old Katie Britt, you know, Shelby's right-hand man? I mean, how many earmarks is she going to have the next time she goes around to grease the skids for her own re-election? I mean, the BS factor is just a little bit too high to deal with, okay? And I don't want to get too much of a rant on this, but my point is, okay, this is the fourth issue, okay? The debt. So if we don't deal with it, and you've got 25% of the federal budget, which is already in deficit anyway, okay, and then now it's going to go for servicing the debt. What are we going to cut? Well, what the Democrats want to cut, and they have done it, you know, is defense. So, I mean, not only are they destroying the military establishment with wokeness, you know, but they've also, you know, pushed budget. I mean, Biden's budget was added. They added about $40 billion to it because of the necessity of keeping up with inflation and the fact that, we're spending so much on Ukraine, you know, we're depleting our own stores of ammunition and equipment. Once again, I get back to fundamentals. If servicing the debt is going to cost 25% of the budget, who is going to take the cut? Are all these little earmark buddies out there, are they going to suddenly become, you know, budget hawks and say, oh, well, I'll give up my earmarks? Really? You watch how this plays itself out. None of them will do that unless we start telling our Alabama congressional delegates, stop the earmarks, get on board with doing something about the debt and balancing the budget. I mean, there's nothing new about this. That's what is so outrageous and so frustrating about it. We all know the problem. And yet it keeps on going on and on and on and on. And now it's only worse because the Republicans caved into going back to earmarks, which just a few years ago was one of the big selling points about why we needed to have the Republicans in Congress running a tight ship. Right. Oh, I tell you what, I really want to say a bad word, but Lori's got her finger on the button.
I do.
It's too close.
I'm watching.
I can't take a chance. All right, so there, I'll get off that one because that's obviously too irritating for me to stick on that one any longer. Plus, I am actually running out of time. Can you believe this?
You've been on 38 minutes.
Okay, so she's watching the clock too here. Okay, all right. Well, here's my next big one. The border crisis. And you say, well, wait a second, Dr. Liu. Biden and Mayorkas and Chris, whatever the little girl's name, who is the secretary for the press relations person, okay? Yeah, okay. The one who doesn't know.
Right.
Blank from
There's
Shinola.
There's been so many, I don't remember her name.
Yes,
either.
Okay. I can't remember all their names. Okay. I mean, Dr. Liu, they keep saying the border's closed. What is wrong with you? Why don't you just buy into that? Duh. Okay, let's just kind of think about the border. So this past fiscal year, 2.76 million have come across.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. 600,000 gotaways, okay? 600,000 gotaways.
What does that mean?
That means that we stopped 2.76 million and they let them in, but 600,000 did not get stopped, did not get searched, did not get checked in.
Okay.
Okay, which is all a BS approach anyway. Okay, you talk about, remember how Trump was opposed to catch and release that Obama was doing, and so they stopped catch and release. All Biden has done is made the Border Patrol nothing more than a processing agency. This last omnibus bill, if you noticed, I think I even said something about this the last two shows ago. The omnibus bill had no teeth in it to improve the border
security.
Security. Okay? All they did was improve the ability to process all these people. It's absolutely nuts. Nuts. Okay? So what we have here is 2.76 million last time. I think they've had 280,000 already in December. They've set records every month, okay? So despite freezing weather and all the problems, they're still coming. And so you ask yourself, how can they continue to say that the border is closed? And the short answer is because that's exactly what they want you to believe. They want you to accept this as border control because we're processing the people in an orderly fashion. Okay? That's all this is. It has nothing to do with controlling the border, as Trump had done with the wait in Mexico policy, getting the Mexican government to stop some of the flow, talking to our Central American, allies of sort, and getting them to do the hard work in their own countries to deal with gangs which are pushing people out. I mean, look, there is a whole lot to say for, immigration, obviously. This isn't an anti-immigration statement. It's a statement about how do you protect the American people, number one. How do you deal with, our own problems? And how do you have, border towns like El Paso, Del Rio, and all the rest of these places have thousands of people sitting in the street as homeless people? What the hell is this all about? And so run the reel back just a few years ago, and all the Democrats are screaming about Trump's inhumane policies. Inhumane. Well, what is so humane about having people just like these homeless people in Los Angeles and San Francisco all over the place? What's so humane about having these migrants, illegal migrants, laying on El Paso's sidewalks, freezing? How does El Paso and all these other cities deal with the overflow of people into the emergency rooms? If they're going to be there for a while, how do the schools handle these kids that are supposed to be put in their schools? I mean, where does it end? I mean, at some point, you have to ask yourself, are we going to continue this, or will the Republicans find a way when they take control of the House to stop it? And I mean, Governor Abbott has tried to do, he's got the Lone Star, approach to this. They spent $5 or $6 billion on deploying their own National Guard. They're doing what they can to put some containers like Arizona. No, I mean, here's the irony of this. The federal government will not finish the wall that Trump started. Obviously, anything that Trump did, we can't do. No Keystone Pipeline, no way to Mexico, no sending them back, no testing these people for COVID. Oh, my God. Okay, so if Trump did it, we can't do it. All right, so here we are dealing with not only the humanitarian crisis on the border with the illegal migrants, but look at all the drugs that are coming across with the cartels. Look at all the billions of dollars the cartels are making. In fact, the cartels are running the border. That's it. And I would argue that the fentanyl crisis, where I think we've had over 100,000 people die in this country, mostly younger people, from overdoses. 70,000 for fentanyl. And these aren't overdoses of fentanyl. They have either mistakenly taken it or got a little bit somewhere else or had pills that were, looked like something else and were really fentanyl. They're designed to kill people. I mean, where is this coming from? China? Did Biden say anything to President Xi about fentanyl when they were meeting in Bali last month? Oh, no. Of course not. Did he say anything about human rights violations to the Uyghurs? Oh, no. Can't do that. Did he say anything about easing off of Taiwan? Nope, can't do that, because he's too compromised. The family has taken Chinese money, and we have to sit here and watch him destroy American cities with more and more people being allowed to come in like this, wearing T-shirts, borders open, help me Biden, or whatever. No, folks, You know, this is a deliberate policy. They want these people. They think that they are going to transition them to be Democrat voters. It's going to fundamentally change the country. And if the Republicans don't do something about it, then what's left? Texas ranchers down there, are they going to just finally band together in their own little militia and preserve their property and their livelihoods and their lives? I mean, are the Border Patrol people going to be supported enough to where 14 have committed suicide because this is just too much to deal with? I mean, think about this. These poor Border Patrol folks are committing suicide because they can't do their job. It's overwhelming. But we're the ones who are inhumane. I don't buy this. And I'll tell you something. If these Republicans can't do something this time around, it seems to me that you're just leading yourself to a third party challenge. Okay? And I don't want to get too far into that right now, but I do think that where this is going, it's going to be very ugly, because we cannot stand to continue to do this. Every city in this country, isn't it amazing, and the hypocrisy of this, when Ron DeSantis sent, you know, 50 people on a plane to Nantucket or wherever the hell it was, what did they do? They flipped out. They go on TV. Oh, we didn't know anyone was coming. We can't do this. So they shift them over to an Air Force base in Massachusetts. I mean, they don't want to deal with it. And they have the means to make sure that they don't have to deal with it. I mean, the hypocrisy factor of these states that are all sanctuary states. This is you better get your finger on the button, because I'm close.
Okay.
I'm close.
Take a deep breath.
All right. Here we are. The hypocrisy factor is off the charts. Okay? They want sanctuary cities. Mayor Adams from good old New York. Oh my God, we can't deal with this. We need federal money. You have to help us. Hey, you wanted it. Deal with it. I mean, it is just outrageous what these people do. So my point here is that this is an opportunity for the Republican Party to stand on its own two feet and do what it can to stop this insanity. All right? We have two other things to talk about. One is, thank you, Lori. Now I can, at least I'm not completely soaking wet. One is the rise of China. Now, I've had Commander Cox on this show. We re-ran him last week, talking about the rise of China. All right. So I don't want to dwell a long time on this, particularly since I don't have much time left. But the point is, the rise of China is something that I would argue is one of the most critical things that we have to deal with coming out of last year, okay? And I think that, as Commander Cox has pointed out, there's nothing new about the Chinese approach to all this. Xi has set a course that the Chinese will be the dominant, you know, world power through the Belt and Road, through playing the long game, through making sure that their military is up to speed, which they have done, you know, with billions of dollars, new equipment, highest technology, investing in missile technology, to give them the opportunity that if they have to use missiles against the American 7th Fleet, our Western Pacific Fleet, then they will be able to have that, the effect that will make it very difficult for us to project power into the Western Pacific, meaning that means Taiwan will not be supported. That means that Japan will be left alone, Australia possibly, depending upon what the Chinese want to do. So, I mean, we get back to fundamentals here. And not only do we have fundamentals to be concerned about, okay, the woke American military, the degree to which we have a strategy that essentially, based on what happened with Afghanistan, is no strategy at all. What are we doing? I mean, have we sent a signal to Taiwan and to the world that we are standing with them? Well, I mean, Biden has been all over the map with that. I mean, in some ways, strategic ambiguity is still the strategy. Well, strategic ambiguity, as I have suggested before, leads to miscalculations. I mean, Xi has his own problems right now. The Chinese economy is in, you know, trouble. He's had major trouble over COVID. Just a few weeks ago, people were rioting in the streets. So what is the traditional approach that dictators take when they have these internal problems? Well, they look outside. Find a bogeyman outside. And that's exactly what Xi has with, you know, the United States and Taiwan. It's perfect, perfect for him. And where are we? We've got Biden compromised with the family doing business in China. Big money. Not just a couple of million, okay? Big money. What other things does Xi have to hold over Biden? I mentioned a little while ago when they were in Bali. Did Biden say anything about human rights violations? Oh, no, can't do that. No, 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 no. Say anything about the origins of COVID? Oh, hell no. Man, that's a big oops. Steer away from that. What about Taiwan? Nope, can't do anything about that either. Strategic ambiguity. All right, so fine. So here we are with the threat from China. And again, notice how we have had this infiltration with the Confucian Institutes. Again, all the things that we've talked about before. Okay? Chinese scholars coming to the United States. Chinese students taking over lots of the STEM courses. So we have Christopher Wray, who is certainly no stalwart in terms of the FBI being, four square against what's going on here. But even he had thousands of, you know, cases opened up on Chinese spying. So we know what's going on. We know what's going on. Are we going to be able to do anything about it with an administration that is so unlike Trump, who was willing to call them out, who put tariffs on them, who challenged them, who let the American people know that we're not going to just roll over for the Chinese? And now we've got Biden allowing the Chinese to do all sorts of things. Some of them include buying property, buying American farmland, buying pieces of property near American military bases. What the hell is that all about? So China is one of those things that I did want to talk about this morning, and I just did. Now that leads me to my last thing, which is Russia and Ukraine. Okay? Yeah, I'm down to 4 minutes or so. I know. Laurie's giving me the roll it up sign. Okay, yes.
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Oh, thank you, Laurie. I like that. That's good.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Oh, I'm going to take full advantage of that, I'll tell you. All right, so here we've got the war on Ukraine. Now, I have argued here, and we've had guests on this show, that have basically said that Putin has to be stopped. There's no question about this. Now, I would suggest to you that if you look at the recent history of Putin and Ukraine, what you have seen is, number one, the resurrection of Putin's idea that the Soviet Empire has to be brought back into being. Okay? So how does he do that? Well, he can start by moving towards supporting those areas of Ukraine that are supportive of Russia. Okay, the eastern part. The western part is more oriented toward Europe. The eastern part, where they've had, 37% of the people are Russian, supporters. That's where he drew the line here and started moving to support those people in 2013. Say, okay, this is an important part of all this, okay? When Putin started to move against the state of Georgia in 2008, he took two small provinces, South Ossetia being one of them. Those provinces were full of people supporting Russia, okay? And so the argument that Putin was able to make was that we're supporting those who support us, whether they're Russian-speaking people or not. They are inclined to support Russia. So look at Crimea. Right after the Winter Olympics that Putin, you know, had on display for the world, Putin moves against Crimea, uses his army to take it over, and then has this referendum that supposedly, you know, validated the taking over of Crimea. Well, that just didn't stand. And even Obama was forced to put sanctions on. The UN even said the referendum was bogus, had no legitimacy. Well, that didn't change anything, though, did it? Okay? And at the same time that he finished taking Crimea, you started to have militias in the east, the Donetsk area, that started to have an ongoing civil war against the Ukrainians. Okay? So keep that in mind as you understand the play that's happening here. Essentially, Putin has wanted to dismember Ukraine. All right? In part because the western part of Ukraine leans to the Europeans. They wanted to join the European Union. And there are historical reasons for this too. In part because right before World War II, you saw the communists under Stalin just devastate the Ukrainian people with the famine, and the Ukrainians never forgave him for that. And that led to many Ukrainians joining the SS during the war. Now, we have this thrown about that, you know, the people who are supporting, you know, Zelensky and others are all Nazis. Well, let me just say this. Given what Stalin did, do you expect those people to do anything else other than join the only group that could have defeated Stalin? Okay? I'll leave it at that. But there's this aspect of this that has to be taken into account. And so here you are today where Putin bit off more than he can chew. We believe that he has to be stopped. But, and this is where I've said this before on the show, how far are we going to go with this? Putin has threatened to use nuclear weapons. What do we do if he does? If he pops a nuke somewhere to prevent his loss, what are we going to do? My argument there is we cannot get into a nuclear tit-for-tat business. This is not where our interest lies. So we have to be able to fight this conventionally and do what we have to do to make sure that Ukraine does not go under the way the Crimea did. Having said that, what are the outlines for a settlement? It seems to me pretty clear that something has to be done to incorporate those people in the eastern part who want to be part of Russia, to have them be part of Russia. If it means dismembering, you know, that Ukraine, then that's part and parcel of it. I mean, there is an argument about self-determination of nations, which came about after World War I. I think we'll pursue this down the road, okay? But clearly, these issues that I've talked to you about this morning, and down to the good graces of Lori here, I've had some extra time, and thank you so much for that. But did you have a question there, or are you just going to close out?
Yes, especially with your first and second points dealing with how it's up to the people to react and to push and to go after our elected officials to follow the agenda that we need.
Right.
How do we do that?
Well, we do that by...
You mentioned a meeting in January.
Right.
Tell us how folks can get involved.
Right. What we are going to do is get ourselves reorganized, Common Sense Campaign, and at the local level, we will be working with, you know, Jerry Carl, our congressman, and we will be working to try to get Tuberville and Britt to follow this, okay? At the state level, we are going to be doing the same thing. We're going to be organizing ourselves throughout the state so that we've got like a shadow government across the state to make sure that the same things that we're doing with Common Sense are going to be done throughout the state.
Are you inviting people to join
yes.
the Common Sense Campaign? Well, how do they do that? How do
right.
they find out more information?
Well, you can certainly go to the Common Sense Campaign website on how to join and get information about this. But we're having a state meeting in Clanton on January 21st. You know, the results of that meeting will filter out to where we will start building an organizational structure throughout the state a little bit more detailed than the Alabama Conservative Coalition, which is a very broad, you know, group that is loosely organized. We need to have a better organization that meets the challenges today, and that's what we're going to try to do.
So it's Common Sense Campaign Tea Party.
Right. And
CommonSenseCampaign.org.
Yes.
CommonSenseCampaign.org. Okay.
All right. So that in a nutshell is where we're going with this, and we'll do that. So, all right, folks. Next week, I want to talk about Alabama and the same types of issues, but look at it from the perspective of the state and local, so we can have that retrospective and set the stage for where we want to go in the future. I do hope that everyone had a wonderful holiday. Looking forward to seeing you next week. God bless. Take care.
Thank
Bye.
You. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by an anonymous donor and by Sprague's Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. If you missed part of this program, you can listen to it later. It will be posted at WABF1480.com. This is WABF Mobile Fairhope. Great music and memories.